The Nail in the Coffin!
Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to The Nail in the Coffin. It's been a minute, but I'm still Tom Valentino. He's still Travis Yulee, and we are still part of the world-famous Evergreen Podcast Network. Trav, how are you, buddy?
Doing great, buddy. I'm trying to decide which quarterback the Browns should draft this week.
Hey, you know, it's great.
Oh, wait, it's 2021 anymore. Never mind.
Yeah. How about that?
What a change of pace.
This is great. I love it. I'm just going to say that it's going to be nice to sit back. And for once,
it's weird. The one time the Browns are drafting super late is when the draft is here.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, for once, we don't have to worry about the Browns trying to find a cornerstone for their franchise. But we still have reason to get super excited for this because the draft's actually here next to the stadium. And to help us talk about that and some other stuff, our old friend from Crane's Cleveland Business, Kevin Kleps. Kev, how are you, man?
Gentlemen, what's going on?
All right.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So what is this thing going to look like from a fan perspective? I feel like this is going to be a big deal for the league after they couldn't really do a real NFL draft as we've come to know it over the last few years. Last year, they're kind of getting back to normal with this. What's this thing going to look like?
This is really one of the few big-time events that have been held in the last 14 months. They're saying 50,000 a day will be allowed downtown. The NFL draft experience, the vast majority of that will be the NFL draft experience, which is pretty much an interactive fan festival where you can do a ton of different things. They call it a football theme park. And then there'll be a limited number in the theater, which is for the vaccinated VIPs of the NFL, healthcare workers. I think there's going to be a limited amount of them in there, and then maybe some draft prospects and some other team representatives. So that's not really going to be a fan engagement point, but the NFL experience area will be where most of the fans who are visiting are going to be. And then anyone can pretty much go down there during the day throughout the week and just check it out, which is, I think, from what I've seen on social media, a lot of people are doing.
So the VIP area, that's that airport hangar looking structure that they built down by the waterfront.
That thing is a beast. Yeah, that I've seen it compared on Twitter to the old Tower City Amphitheater, and it's a pretty good comparison. But yeah, unfortunately, that thing is temporary because I think a lot of people, after seeing how it looks and how with all the technology it has with the displays and everything, they'd like to see it stay there. And it could be some kind of concert venue, maybe for the Rock Hall or something like that. But it's all, David Gilbert was telling me last week that it's all rental equipment. So that thing is, once the draft is over, that thing's going down.
It's wild that they were able to get something like that up so quickly. Like, it just seemed like it was like 2 days, and then all of a sudden, poof, there it is.
And it just shows you, the NFL is just such an absolute beast. They come into town, they throw down 15, 20 million, all this stuff gets built, and then they leave, stuff goes down, and it's like, hey, I hope you guys had fun.
For all intents and purposes, it seems like it's generally going to be, for the most part, kind of like the draft was before. Obviously, they'll be a little more strict about security and people getting in, but is there sort of a sigh of relief that it's pretty damn close to normal? I mean, even a month ago, this probably seemed like a long shot.
I know late last year, there was still a lot of trepidation of whether this was going to happen or not. When you had those holiday spikes and COVID numbers were surging again, there was a lot of thought, though, okay, is this even going to happen? Are we going to have another virtual draft? Is Cleveland going to lose out and have to wait a few years for this to happen? So, yeah, this is a small victory in itself, just getting to this point where they can host it. It's not going to be nearly what you saw in Nashville. That scene was incredible in 2019. With the
so no crying bridesmaids and everything?
Seriously, I'm not sure I've ever seen a spectacle like that on TV where you just – the way the streets were lined and everything, it was like a team that wins a Super Bowl or a – national championship where you see on college campuses. That was just the entire area of downtown Nashville. It's not going to be anything close to that. I mean, 50,000 people, I mean, it's going to be, from a numbers perspective, equivalent to, I mean, be a little bit less than a Browns game before COVID. So, I mean, it's not going to be nearly what we thought it was, but in the last, what we've lived with the last 14 months, 50,000 is a pretty big number.
Where is everybody going to be if they're not in that big structure that the VIPs are in?
It's all spread out. It's all fan experience. The First Energy Stadium is part of that fan experience. So that area is going to host a lot. You'll have quite a few people going through there. It's the area outside the Rock Hall. It's the areas by the Great Lakes Science Center. All that walkability down there by Brown Stadium with the sidewalk areas and by the malls and everything, that's all going to be the fan experience. The Rock Hall, the Science Center, First Energy Stadium, that whole area, the malls, which is that's a ton of room, and it's all outside. So that's the perfect recipe for something like this when people are, when COVID is still very much a thing.
Yeah, hopefully we can get the weather to cooperate. Now, you said that during the day people can go down there and just check it out, but correct me if I'm wrong, but during the actual hours that the draft's going on, is that restricted to people with passes then, or how does that work?
When the draft is going on, yeah, I think you need the experience passes, which is whatever. There's three different periods each day that they have. So if you can get an interval of, I think it's like noon to 3 or 3 to 6, and then mm-hmm. six to the last pick is made. So if you're in that interval, you can be around that area. Otherwise, yeah, it's going to be blocked off. But you could still obviously go mill around downtown and check out the sites and try to get as close to it as possible. And I'm sure the restaurants and bars for the first time in a while are going to be absolutely swamped, which I don't know how I would feel about that with everything we've dealt with the last 14 months, but it's going to be good for a lot of businesses down there. The hotels are, a lot of the hotels are at capacity, and it's a shot in the arm for a lot of different people.
Well, speaking of shots in the arm, I was going to say, I think a lot of how you feel about all that downtown is going to largely depend on how recently you got your second shot. Maybe up the street at Wolstein Center or one of the other fine locations around Northeast Ohio. Yeah, I've always kind of wondered just about the draft as a live in-person experience, because when we're watching it on TV, you get Mel Kiper in his magnificent helmet of hair or Todd McShay or, you know, the people on NFL Network breaking down these picks for 15 minutes and then moving on to the next guy, and you get interviews and you got a lot going on to fill time on a TV broadcast. But if you're watching the draft in person, I've always kind of wondered, like, how much is there going on? What kind of an actual experience is that from an attendee perspective?
Yeah, I know. I've wondered the same thing, just because it is more of a television experience. From what I've heard about the draft experience area, they're going to have huge screens with the broadcast showing the draft. So, and you can go around, you can do your kicking the field goal, First Energy Stadium, or whatever interactive fan experience you want. But and the whole time, you're going to be able to watch the draft. You're not going to actually see the stage. You're not going to have a very good view of the stage, but you can watch the draft on the big screen. So it would kind of be like you were at a outdoor festival and you're watching a game that way. So it could be a cool way to do it, especially this year if you're a Browns fan and the draft, while it's still important, you're not worried about getting your next quarterback and you're not worried about who you're going to pick at number 3 or number 4 or number 5. You actually get to wait until near the end of the night to see your team make a pick. So you have plenty of time to enjoy other stuff.
Well, if they're kicking field goals over First Energy Stadium, maybe we could do some stealth tryouts and see if we could upgrade the kicking position for this season. I don't know.
I do not want anyone to watch me do that.
That is one of the hardest. I mean, we all joke around thinking we're athletes or whatever, but whenever I've tried to kick a field goal, I couldn't feel smaller.
No, it's terrible.
I used to do that a lot in my backyard. We had my backyard was pretty much straight across, wide open, and at the one end we had a clothesline, and my dad had got me a football and a tee, and I would just spend hours kicking over the clotheslines. That was the goalposts, and
you would win the podcast style field goal kicking competition.
It's been a long time. Field goal you've ever seen, but
no style points. I will leave it at that.
Kevin, from like a operational perspective, we obviously saw teams last year had to pretty much completely rethink the way that they did it, right? They were all sort of at home and A lot of it was going on Zoom and stuff like that. How's it going to look for the teams this year? Are they all sort of doing it? Like we saw, I think LA like decided, hey, we're just going to get a mansion sponsored by Rocket Mortgage and we're going to hang out there, which is, I mean, okay, I can't blame them. The house looks sweet, but is it sort of just up to each team how they do it? And they kind of just play it by ear and do whatever they were most comfortable with.
Yeah, it's team by team. That was a very LA Rams thing to do, but for the most part, I think it's the vast majority of the 32 teams are just going to be doing it at their facilities in a spread out
in like a normal war room, like normal.
Yeah, the war rooms won't even be what we're used to though, because they're gonna have. They're probably just going to have the GM and maybe a couple other people in that room. And then you'll have other rooms in the facility with other executives spread out. So just because of the COVID protocols that the league has. But yeah, the Browns are doing it at their facility. And I guess that 20 some other teams are doing the same thing. The Rams are the exception. I don't know what Cliff Kingsbury has planned this year.
I was
going
to say, I think McVay felt like he got one out. They need to get Kingsbury back this year.
I was talking to an ESPN producer today for a story I'm going to write, and it was interesting. He was talking about how that's one thing, as tough as that was to pull off, that virtual draft where, I mean, it was phenomenal. That's one of the things he's going to miss is the stuff you saw last year with Bill Belichick's dog and everything going on at Mike Vrabel's house.
I don't need to see Vrabel's house again.
Oh, man. It just the GM, what was it, the Dolphins coaches and his kids. There was a lot of cool stuff, and that's –
yeah,
that stuff we're going to lose with this.
Roger Goodell in his basement.
Yes. Yeah, Goodell in his basement was – he was pretty good. He exceeded my expectations with that. I thought he was pretty good.
I remember –
there's still cameras, and I think it's like 40-some draft prospects' houses. So you're still going to get some virtual element, but it's not going to be like it was last year. Last year was crazy.
How many people are they expecting to be there player-wise? Like how many are they expecting to show up?
I think it's only 13, which is lower than normal. I don't know. That's probably a lot of COVID impact there. And Justin Fields is not one of them, which was a little disappointing.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know where he's going to go, but I don't want to get into the draft stuff yet. It's.
I tell you, man, it's been nice not – really studying any of the mock drafts.
Not being that invested in it.
Not having to worry about that at all. Just no pressure. What are the Browns drafting? 26th, I think?
Yeah.
You're rooting for a real NFL team now. They're trying to complement their team. They're not trying to remake it on the fly again.
I love it. It's great. I could get used to this.
The thing that's funnier, though, is it makes like – Browns draft Twitter like even more obnoxious, because before it was like, oh, I want one of these four quarterbacks. Now it's like, oh, I think Zaven Collins is the guy. It's like, you haven't watched any Zaven Collins. Okay, get out of here.
Oh yeah,
there's a handful, and you know there's some people out there who are putting in great work.
I'm talking about more just like at the fan level. Everyone thinks that like they watched 2 minutes of Zaven Collins highlights and he's the guy now.
Watching a YouTube mixtape is not
watching the All-22.
Man, I tell you, I don't know how the radio guys do it. I mean, Trev, you and I haven't been on here since March Madness was getting started. So, you know, we could pick and choose our spots in terms of what we want to talk about on here. But yeah, when you're in the middle of draft season and you don't have to try to pick a franchise quarterback or a left tackle or, you know, a pass rusher at the top of the draft, it's a whole different world.
Yeah, like local sports radio, they've had their content cut out for them for the last 20 years. Now it's like you can't just talk draft anymore.
No.
Filling 5 hours a day of that.
Right.
That's not easy. That is absolutely not easy.
I wish them a lot of luck. Hey, something that caught my eye a few weeks ago, we were talking about COVID-related restrictions in terms of what's going to be happening at the draft and, you know, who's allowed where. Buffalo, the city of Buffalo made a pretty interesting announcement. Was it about a month ago, I'd say, that for Bills games and I think the Sabres, you're going to be required to show proof of vaccination to get into games. And Kev, I'm curious, have you heard any sort of discussion as to whether we might see that with any of the Cleveland teams? And if so, who's making that call? Is it the teams themselves? Is it the city, the county, the state? Where does the decision-making power on that lie here?
I haven't heard anything about that coming here. That would have to be, I would think, a collaborative measure between the teams and the health authorities and the local governments, because I just can't see the team saying, we're going to do this and you're going to like it, and without talking to the appropriate organizations. I just don't see that happening. But no, I haven't heard that is going to happen here. I know I give the Haslams credit today for coming out and pushing vaccines. That was good to hear. Just saying that they stand by and they think everyone should get vaccinated. And I know the Cavs and Indians would say the same thing. And just they all know that the more people that do it is going to be better for all of us and better for any fans who want to gather at these games. But no, I haven't heard that that's going to happen. And there's still the optimism that the Indians still think that this summer they're going to be allowed full capacity, and maybe as soon as maybe June or July 4th holiday, just somewhere around there. So
if there's the optimism
that that's where we're headed, but I haven't heard that there's going to be any kind of that. They'll still do the health checks and all that, but I don't think it's going to be any kind of requirement that you were vaccinated.
Ready to up your game and learn more about the thrilling world of sports betting? Introducing Double Down with Breslow, the ultimate podcast about the business of sports gambling. Join me, James Breslow, and a long list of expert guests as we dive into the art and science of the sports betting industry, evolving regulations, technology enhancements, and the meteoric rise in the number of players makes this sector the fastest growing and most intriguing in the world. Unlock the business secrets from many of the industry's most recognizable C-suite executives, including famous odds makers and influencers. Every episode of Double Down with Breslow is packed with insider tips, deeply skilled analysis, and in-depth discussions. Don't miss out on the ultimate resource for mastering the business of sports betting. Listen to Double Down with Breslow on the Evergreen Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Double Down with Breslow, the business of sports betting podcast.
If they were to put in a requirement, like, who would make that decision? Like, I know, at least at the government level, I don't know if you guys even know the answer to that. I think at Buffalo it was the executive, which is the most generic title ever. I think for Cuyahoga County, it's that Armand Budish guy. I see his name on like gas pumps. like, who would make that decision in Cuyahoga County?
I think that would be something. I think it might go higher than that. I mean, Budish would be involved and the mayor would be involved, but I would think if the team was going to take that significant a step, they would be consulting with the Wines organization just to get the input of the governor and his team, because that's just such a big move that I don't know if you keep that just strictly local. I would think you might be going up higher up the food chain just to consult with them to see what they think.
Well, then it also comes down to who technically owns these buildings, right? Because I think that was one of the deals with Buffalo was I think it was either the city or the county owns their sports venues there. So that was why they didn't have to go through the state to get, you know, their restrictions put into place. And I mean, we know who is doing a lot of the work in these venues here in Cleveland, but technically, I mean, I think those are either city or county owned venues.
Yeah, those
right?
are city and county owned venues. So yeah, I mean, I would think they would have the final authority on it, but my whole thing was, I would think that they would be consulting with the state if they were going to pull such a move, because other teams in the state aren't doing it. And the Wine has been pretty vocal about that. He's hoping that it's going to be full capacity in the next couple of months.
The Cavs, they're at what, like 4,000 per game?
Yeah, I think it's like they're allowed to technically have more than they do, but because of their protocols and because of how they've spread out the pods, I think they're like 4,100. I think that's it's somewhere in that number. And I mean, at this point, that's pretty much what you're going to see.
Okay. I'm not sure it's the pods that's keeping the attendance low.
No, that's the thing. That's what's kind of interesting about the Cavs and Indians right now is you do have some COVID hesitation where people were waiting until they got fully vaccinated before they wanted to go to a game, before they felt comfortable. I heard that from people in both organizations where that was a real thing where people were a little hesitant until they were vaccinated. But now that you have so many people being fully vaccinated, I mean, for the Cavs, it's too late and the product isn't that good. And the Indians, there's still a lot of bitterness over the off season and the payroll cutting and everything else that combined with any kind of hesitation there was is even with the capacity restrictions, on some nights they're not even getting to that point. On a lot of nights they're not getting to that point.
Once upon a time, I was hoping to get fully vaccinated, and the big goal off in the distance was that I would get to a Cavs game in May with them hopefully having some sort of stakes, maybe trying to get into the play-in. I'm knock on wood, I'm going to be good to go in terms of vaccination, but no, I don't see any play-in in their future with the remaining bodies they have left to even fill out a roster at this point. The injury bug has hit them very hard, really all season.
That whole thing was a pipe dream from the get-go, though. The way that was portrayed, like it was one that it would be a huge thing if they got the 10 seed, when it just didn't make sense to me. The East is so bad. That's the only reason they even had a remote chance, but the best thing for them is to avoid that at all costs and to have the best chance possible. Yeah. They need to be in the top five. They need another guy. And if they get the right piece to go with Garland and Sexton and Allen, maybe you have something. But getting the 10 seed and losing right away, I don't see how that would have been a good thing.
No, and it's so frustrating with where they're at too, because they could fall off a cliff here and not win another game for the rest of the season. And if, you know, you go look at the flattened lottery odds, one spin through tankathon.com will show you. I mean, it's such a crapshoot anyway. I mean, that was at least for me why I was like, I don't have a big problem with them trying to win games, because as we've seen, even when they're trying to win, they're still not winning a whole lot. I don't think you could say they've really been tanking this year. I know Channing Frye made some comment about that late last night.
Did you see what Kevin Love did last night?
Yeah, I did. But the thing of that, I mean, if you saw the whole sequence before that, I think he was more frustrated with the officiating. We could get into the whole Kevin Love debacle here next, but just because you're bad, there are teams that are just bad that even though they're losing, it's not because they're trying to lose. And for the Cavs this year, I think it's been a combination of getting next to nothing from Kevin Love, just constant injuries. I mean, poor Larry Nance, he said the other day on Twitter, he thinks he must have walked under a ladder or something. I mean, that guy's just had a year from hell. And, you know, what do they have, three different guys right now with concussions? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that you could reasonably say that they were trying to tank this year. They were legit trying to win. They
were doing everything in their power to put a competitive team together. Sure.
Yeah, they had a lot of bad luck with injuries. The Kevin Love situation is not ideal for anyone. And the Drummond thing was the one. I mean, there's a lot you can question with the Cavs, but the Drummond situation just was so weird even getting him last year, even though he didn't cost much. And then what they did with him this year, and then just understand why you sit him with, because you have Allen, but then just the way they handled everything, that was such a strange situation. And just the, invest all that money into him, and then just say, okay, you're done, you're sitting. That was just such a weird, weird situation.
I still put a lot of that on him. He had to know that he wasn't in the long-term plans here, and obviously getting Jared Allen accelerated the timeline on that. But even still, if you remember back when that trade was first made, Jared Allen was coming off the bench. Drummond was getting minutes. He was still starting. They were still getting him plenty of touches. They were giving him every opportunity in the world to showcase himself, to hopefully salvage some sort of a value for a trade. And he went out there with a terrible body language and basically played his way off the floor. And I don't think I've seen anybody in Los Angeles that's been particularly excited about the way he's been playing for the Lakers since then either. So, I mean, you know, and it's kind of the same thing with Kevin Love. I mean, Kevin Love's not happy to be here. Well, you know, get on the floor and show that you're not a complete net negative and, you know, make a contribution, and maybe you could actually get yourself traded somewhere. Nobody wants to trade for you the way you're playing right now.
No,
I don't know if anyone's trading for him at $60 million.
No, that contract didn't make sense from the minute they signed it. I think most people, when the Cavs gave him that extension, were like, okay, what are they doing? I mean, LeBron just left. You need to totally rebuild. You need to tear it down. It's cool that he was part of this championship team and he's a superstar, and although he's not what he used to be, but why are you giving him a 4-year, $120 million contract? Do you really think you're going to win with him as your number one or your number two? I think most of us thought it was silly at the time, and now it's just a debacle.
That was pretty much doomed from the get-go too, because he got injured right before the start of that first season post LeBron. And I mean, he's been behind the eight ball, I think, ever since with injuries. It's crazy to think about. So this is his seventh year with the Cavs, and he's going to probably end up playing at least 8 years here, I would think. And in that time, he will have actually played in zero All-Star games. He got named to two All-Star teams, and he was hurt for both of them. And the other years, he did not make it. So if you'd have told me when they traded for him in the summer of 2014, that he'd be here this long and he would never play in an All-Star game as a Cav, never would have guessed that.
I never would have thought he would have outlasted LeBron and Kyrie.
I looked it up today, and I think since LeBron left, he's only played in 96 out of 208 games. It's something like that.
It's less than half.
It's a staggering low percentage for the last 3 years.
Best ability is availability, folks.
Yep. I mean, I love what he's done off the court with mental health and everything else, and he's such a likable guy, but just on the court, he clearly hasn't handled himself that well during any kind of period where they're struggling. He just doesn't look good.
I don't really remember, and maybe, I mean, this was so long ago. Was he like this when he was in, like, Minnesota? Because they weren't very good when he was there. Like, he was better then, obviously. He was just getting, like, 15 rebounds a night then, and was, you know, perennial All-Star. But was he sort of the same way? Like, was he like legitimately like a leader there? I don't remember anything about that.
Honestly, I just know
he was young then too. So it's maybe not.
He was a bigger guy. I mean, I remember the bigger, shaggier Kevin Love, who was just an absolute beast. But I think I remember there being questions then of whether, I mean, as good as he was, they never won anything. It was, there was that whole ESPN, typical ESPN debate show topic of, I mean, is Kevin Love going to lead you somewhere? And I mean, then he got here and he didn't have to be the guy. Then he got dealt into this whole soap opera of the LeBron era, but he handled himself pretty well at those times.
Fit in, don't fit out, Kevin.
There's been some classics.
Oh my God. Hey, one other thing we wanted to ask you about while we got you. You had written about this recently. We might finally have legalized gambling in Ohio. What's going on there?
There's a lot of momentum this year. There was a couple years ago that this was going to get done, and then it kind of fell apart last year when some politicians who were on board didn't get reelected, and you had competing bills in the different sides of the Ohio government. But now this year there's a major push to get this done. And the big three sports teams in Cleveland and the other major professional sports teams in the state are really kind of aiding the push because they want their cut too, which is going to be interesting to see how it all develops. But yeah, it looks like it's possible that within the next few months that you could, I mean, they're hoping a bill gets introduced here in the next 2 months and it gets voted on before there's a summer break. I think that's at the end of June. So you could have something possibly on the books in the next few months. And the goal is to get it done before the year's over, which is, I mean, I think Ohio's been behind the times with a lot of this stuff, but they're still.
Yeah, they're one of the last ones to the game.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, though, but them being behind the times is really could end up being good for the sports teams in the state because of the way that everything has changed with this legislation, with some states are giving these teams a cut of the action by letting them have a sports book in their actual facilities or right outside their facilities. That wasn't part of all these early bills in these other states. That's a very recent thing. And now with Ohio waiting, the sports teams in the state are like, hey, let's do what Arizona did. Let's do what DC has and what Maryland has. And it looks like if that's going to happen in Ohio, as far as a bill getting passed, that they will, that'll be a part of it where you can go to Progressive Field and you can't actually have it in an MLB ballpark, but I think it could be right outside. But at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, you could have a sports book. At First Energy Stadium, you could have a sports book, and you could also place a bet on your phone with a Browns affiliated gambling app, which is pretty crazy.
Is there a way that they can take some of this revenue and like write it into the law that part of it needs to be funneled into Indians payroll?
I think they would go to the schools first and maybe some other things in the state. I think the Indians payroll might be a little bit farther down that list.
But okay, but seriously, do we know what the model looks like? I know for a while it sounded like it was between like the lottery running it and maybe the casino commission, or like do we know like what in all likelihood it will look like?
It looks like it's going to be the casino commission that, okay. I mean, of the Ohio Senate's committee that's looking at it right now, and everything that's been pushed forward as far as the meetings they've had and all the talk I've seen is that they all, and the teams are very much in favor of the casinos running it, which, I mean, that makes sense. The lottery thing, then you have the chance of the everything, the market game getting more crowded. Because if you have the lottery running it, then you could be getting bars and restaurants involved and bingo halls and everything else. Then I don't know. Is that too much? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Are we likely to see sports books popping up elsewhere? Like, I mean, we've got the casino downtown, even if we don't have phase two, Trav.
Bring it up.
We
don't want to talk about it.
We do have the casino down there. Could they get a book put in there? I mean, are we going to see something out here in Lake County, or is this strictly going to be on site or near on site to the actual stadiums downtown?
No, it would be if it's the casino, the commission that's running it, and if you go by what the coalition that came out with their plan last week, if something similar to that is put into legislation, there would be licenses for the three big, for the all the pro sports teams and all the casinos and racinos. So I think it was a total of 20 licenses. So you're looking at, I think it was 8 pro sports teams in Ohio, counting the MLS clubs, plus the PGA Tour because of the Memorial. So you can bet at the Memorial, and then the 11 casinos and racinos. So yeah, you'd have Thistledown and Northfield. They would have a book. The casino downtown Cleveland would have a book, and then the other ones in the state would as well. So that's the plan that the Ohio sports teams are in favor of. What actually gets written in the legislation remains to be seen, but if the casinos commission is running it, that something like that, I would think would we'd be most likely to see.
Is there going to be legalized wagering on college sports?
I don't think that can. That's a great question. That's something I'm not totally sure of, but I know that the colleges are very much against that being an option, but I'm not sure what New York and New Jersey and some of those states have as far as that goes. Cause
I think you can't bet. I know in some of them, and actually I don't know, but I think in some of the states you can't bet on schools in that state, but you can bet on other ones. So like you couldn't bet on Ohio State, but you could bet on like Michigan, Penn State.
I can't go put my paycheck on my Bobcats when I go down to the MAC tournament next year.
Yeah,
is what you're
probably
telling
for
me.
The best.
I know there's restrictions. I think you can actually bet colleges, but there are restrictions like Travis mentioned with that. And I don't think you can do like props and stuff in college like you can with the pros, but I'm not exactly sure what all of them are.
Brave new world here. This is all stuff, even with some restrictions and limits in place. Even 5 years ago, I never could have envisioned that we could be making progress towards what is apparently on its way here in one form or another.
10 years ago, he told us there was going to be a phase two. Then he sold the damn thing.
Well, honestly, once he sold his casino interest, that kind of eliminated any potential conflict of interest with this stuff going on. When you have the casino commission and the sports teams fighting for their cut, I mean, Gilbert no longer has any kind of what could be perceived as a conflict of interest or an actual conflict of interest. So maybe he knew that all this was coming, and getting rid of his interest in the casinos just made even more sense.
Good stuff.
Still don't like it. Still don't like it.
Trav, did you have anything else for Kev while we got him here?
No, I think that's good. That's I don't know. I guess just to circle it back to the draft, what just to sort of tie a bow up on it there, how much are we, how, and I know we sort of already mentioned this, so this is sort of a random question, but how different is it going to feel for someone sitting at home? And do you think, is there going to be like a very heavy, like, Cleveland tie, or is it really just going to feel sort of like a draft? Because I know, like, in Nashville they always did it, but I feel like for most other places, like especially when it was in New York, we'd see the idiot guy with the fire helmet for the Jets, but for the most part it was just a bunch of random people wearing, you know, whatever team they want, and that was it.
I think
they're going to be pushing like Cleveland like branding a lot. How many guitars am I going to see? That's the question I have.
Well, I'm sure you're going to see some plenty of Rock Hall elements, but because of where they have it set up. When they initially said it was going to be on the lakefront, a lot of people were like, well, why would you do that in Cleveland in April? That sounds pretty dangerous. Not dangerous, but that sounds like an iffy move. And I mean, with the rain in the forecast for this week, maybe it will be proved to be an iffy move. But just because of that location, you're going to have some pretty powerful, I think, TV shots with the lakefront and the First Energy Stadium. And you have the Rock Hall right there and the Science Center and all that. Just when it's all lit up like that and you have the downtown skyline on the lakefront with the NFL draft stage and everything else, I think you're going to have plenty of, it's going to be obvious where it is. And there's going to be some pretty
Cleveland's
cool
been on the national stage a few times, like over the last, I don't know, several years. Right. And it seems like they always do a really good job and everyone comes away saying Cleveland did really well. So hopefully it's more of the same. I heard that, the terminal tower is going to light up like the color of each team that's drafting while they're on the clock.
Yeah, that's
pretty cool. That's
a pretty cool move. All 32 teams, and then when you're on the clock, that team's colors
go up. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Nice touch.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I think, like you said, Kevin, a couple months ago, it seemed like it was a pipe dream that it would even happen. And I don't know about you guys, but when it was like, okay, it might get canceled, it might not be in Cleveland. You said, Kevin, maybe they have to wait a few years. I said, maybe they don't actually ever get it. Like, I don't think the NFL really cares about paying it back. They'd say, okay, whatever, you know, you missed your chance, so on and so forth. So I'm just glad that they get to do something with it. Even if it's not 100%, it seems like it's pretty damn close. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a big deal. It's not going to be as impactful as they originally hoped it was going to be, but it's going to be a big deal when you have that many people down there and you have all the publicity that comes from it, all the TV shots, the glamour shots, all that. It's going to be a big deal. And it's a huge, huge event. The NFL draft is one of the biggest TV shows of the year. When you look at combined coverage and all three straight days of it with, I think last year was 55 million people over the 3 days, that it's a huge, huge deal. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be very obvious where it's stemming from. And that's nothing but a good thing.
Yeah. You know, this year now, when they've done this, I think the last couple of years, you've got three distinct broadcasts airing the draft. There's obviously ESPN that's been doing it forever. The NFL Network does their own. And then for, I think, at least Thursday night, there's another one that's a little bit more, I think, human interest focused on ABC. So, I mean, they're covering it from all angles, and it's a scene.
Yeah, ABC is doing a college centric version, which is
the college version. Yeah,
they got like a college game day type deal where I think that's Thursday and Friday. I don't think that's Saturday, but you have 2 days of that on ABC too. Yeah, that's, and you also look at it as that's another option for the people who have cut the cord or they don't have access to certain channels anymore. Pretty much anyone can watch ABC, so that's another element too.
Yeah.
At least it's not on Bally Sports, because at the rate I'm going, I won't be able to even log in by then.
That's a definite topic for another day. That's a
you're going to make me mad.
The Fox Sports Go app has worked, and then today it just like updated to Bally's, and I went in, and it kept saying like authenticate your Spectrum or whatever, and then it would just freeze and not go anywhere. So, not a great start.
I haven't tried mine yet. That was originally supposed to be ready for opening day of baseball, so they're a few weeks behind.
At least they waited. Yeah, no, I think it'll be cool. I guess this is another question. I'm a little curious because I heard rumblings back when they first announced it that they were going to try to do stuff like at the Hall of Fame and do stuff more spread out around Northeast Ohio. Was that ever really like in the cards and they've scrapped that? Obviously they've scrapped that stuff, but was that ever really in the cards and it's a much smaller scale than it was originally going to be?
No, that was part of the original plan that they put forth to the NFL when they bid on it, and that bid didn't advance and was one of the finalists, but it didn't get picked. And then I think the more they looked at it and the more they spoke with the NFL, it didn't make sense from a logistical perspective. You can't have people going back and forth between Canton and Cleveland. Yeah. You can't have the draft in Cleveland 1 or 2 days and then Canton another day. It just didn't make sense. They still have the Hall of Fame involved with some broadcast elements. ESPN's going to have a presence there, and they're trying to push people to the Hall of Fame just to visit and that kind of stuff. But the actual on-site draft stuff is going to be all Cleveland, just because otherwise it just doesn't make sense for the NFL. When you're putting that much into a production, you can't have it in two different places that far away.
Makes sense.
Kev, good stuff, man. Always good to catch up with you, and I'm sure I'll see you around the neighborhood here this summer.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed it, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Kev.
As a reminder, you could subscribe to The Nail in the Coffin on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and other podcast listening platforms. You could support us on Patreon, patreon.com/WFNY, and choose the Nail in the Coffin tier on there. And of course, you can also listen to us on waitingfornextyear.com as well. Our thanks again to Kevin Kleps from Cranes. For Travis Shuley, I'm Tom Valentino. It's been The Nail in the Coffin, and we will catch you again soon.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.